C4. Number 22B.
We come to the fourth column, or fourth part. It is that part which, in Mrs. Eddy's writings, has the title Mental Treatment Illustrated, and it covers that whole part. What does it want to show with that mental treatment illustrated? It wants to show how that treatment affects the patient. That great question, how is it possible that that which is going on within the treatment of the practitioner and within the consciousness of the practitioner, that it does affect the patient who is far away? In other terms, perhaps also, how is that treatment reflected in the patient? How does it reflect itself in the equal way? It is reflection because that which the practitioner has seen should be reflected exactly in the patient. He should get it in the exact nature. Therefore, that whole fourth part has a great sense of spirit in it, the reflection of spirit, showing how the first, second, and third part is now reflected in the patient. So, how does that reflection manifest itself in the patient? I have said the great question is that everybody asks, how is it possible that that which is in the consciousness of the practitioner has an impact on the patient? What such a one asks is that he still thinks on the level of metaphysics. Namely, he asks for thought transference. He sees places, the place of a practitioner, the place of a patient, and in between a lot of empty space, and ask, how is that consciousness be transported over to the patient? And if that patient is far away, doesn't that lose some of its effect and of its power? They more or less would agree if the practitioner can lay the hand on the body, and they feel there is at least a contact and a mystical power of thought and willpower can flow through it, you see. It's typical mesmerism. That's how Mesmer began to heal the people, by putting his hand or the magnets on the part where the patient was sick. And so they felt, oh yes, that's quite natural. You can now see that somehow an electric current, an animal magnetic fluid now goes from the mesmerist over to the patient. And when that whole mesmerism became more mental and was no more done through laying on of hands, then the question came, what is that medium through which the thoughts of the practitioner can flow in order that it touches somewhere the patient? Thought transference. And so Mrs. Eddy starts actually, you know, this part with healing by arguments, and just touches on that, and wipes it off again after a few sentences. Says, this is only when you don't understand the signs of mind. Then you ask this question, then you use arguments, then you believe in thought transference, in power of thought transference, a power station of the practitioner, and then somewhere the influence of that power on the patient. But he says, this is only really until you see that the practitioner is not healing through thoughts, but through mind, through the one mind, divine mind. And the divine mind is not here nor there. You can't say, lo here and lo there, as the Bible says it. Its mind is one. It has no place. It has no time. That's why mind can heal no matter how far away the patient is, And that's why mind can heal immediately or after a while. It doesn't matter, because divine mind has no time and there's no space. So it doesn't adjust itself to that. So the way, really, the patient is affected here, the first subject is that Mrs. Eddy shows that he's affected through the mind, the science of mind, through mind science, not through arguments, not through thoughts. It is spiritual science, that mentality which is spirit, the one mind. Therefore, we can see if the practitioner is not one with mind, it has no impact on the patient either. That's why in that second column, the practitioner had to establish truth and mind in his mind, that mind which is truth. If he establishes that, then it is the same mind as the patient has. The practitioner then has not a mind of his own, and the patient has a mind of his own, and that there must be somewhere a bridge where this mind, through which the mind can communicate. No. There is one mind, and that mind is God, and that mind is the mind of the practitioner and the mind of the patient. So there is one realm, and within that one realm, you don't need any transference. So this is the first step to see how it is possible that the mind that the practitioner entertains does something to the mind that the patient entertains and has its impact on him. When we look at that whole picture from the point of view of spirit, then we begin to see, but what happens when that divine mind touches the human mind of the patient? It begins to have its impact on the human mind of the patient. How? By bringing more and more order into his consciousness and therefore into the situation. So you have a great sense in spirit that the way the patient is being touched is that the divine mind at the point of spirit brings order, creates order in a situation. And that's what we usually see, that if a healing is not right instantaneous, and you can see the step-by-step healing, that usually first the patient is touched by a new vision, by a new insight, then you can watch how things begin to sort out, the separation, sorting out of things, which is bringing order into his affairs, into his consciousness, into his thinking. So we have in that box order, or creating order. Begma? Spirit. In mind we had the one mind. Oh, sorry, we didn't put anything into that box. All right. So in the first subject on mind, we have the one mind or mind science creates order. Yeah. Then comes soul. What happens? I go always back to mind, you see, what happens when that one mind has its impact on the mind of the patient, a spirit begins to sort out things and begins to order things, well then we experience that there is an overturning taking place, an exchanging of the wrong taking place for the right. So we have a sense of reformation or of change taking place. Soul changes, soul reforms, soul overturns. So change takes place because the higher governs the lesser, until the balance of soul is established. You come to principle and you ask yourself, yes, that's all right, but how does... Is it, you know, exactly the same thing we ask with a drug. We always say, well, how is it somebody swallows a drug, How does the drug know where to go in that body and heal it? Actually, this is the question of a layman. The medical people know to explain that on their theory very easily, because the various cells are receptive only to various chemicals and are not receptive to other chemicals. So the drug goes everywhere in the body, but they don't do a thing there where they are not receptive, you see, and only do something there where it's receptive. So from the medical theory, it's quite easily explainable why the drug goes to the right place. It doesn't go to the right place, it goes everywhere. But finding the congruent reactions of the cell and of the chemical that is swallowed is really the theory and the mystery of it. It's a theory of it. For them, it's quite natural. It's like a chemical reaction in a chemical factory. But we too say, now, how does, so to say, our general knowledge of truth and mind, know what kind of problem to solve? You hear that very often. People ask, why does not your treatment heal somebody else? Why does it heal your patient? There is a whole world, and there are 3 or 4 billion people on this world. Why doesn't the other get healed? Well, here, first of all, Mrs. Eddy shows that it reaches every part. Actually, it reaches every part. A treatment is not restricted to a person. If we try to treat a person, we have anyway not given the right treatment, because the treatment is principle, and that principle is universal. But there, where there is receptivity, there you have an effect. Therefore, actually, we should see that all our treatment which we give have a universal blessing. They reach every part of the universe, but they also reach every part of the body. So the healthy part of the body remain healthy through that treatment, and the unhealthy part of the body will be healthy. Because truth, you see, the idea of truth is that the truth combines and unites all ideas. And therefore that one truth reaches every part of the system. And that's what she wants to show here. That it works in every detail, touches every specific error, because it's universal. Therefore, never feel, when you have given a treatment and the patient doesn't respond to it, that treatment has been in vain. It goes out into the infinitude of the world, and it's a fact in that world, in our universe, and it's a fact that blesses anyway. Even if it only blesses ourselves, because through establishing that fact, we establish a universal fact, and it reaches there, the patient, where there is receptiveness for it. In life, then, if we see that it reaches every detail of the system, we begin to see that it begins to renew, that it gives a newer sense, and a resuscitating takes place. She shows here how through life then, birth, death, heredity, lack, disappear. We can put... Oh yeah. Did we put in soul?
No.
Oh no. We are not going on very systematically. All right. We had in mind the signs of mind, the one mind. In spirit we had creates order. In soul we can say it change takes place. Huh? Reformation, change takes place, whatever you like. In principle, reaches every part, every detail. If it reaches every detail, everything gets new. You have in life renewal of life. And when it renews, well then, we arrive at the form, full renewal, which is health, wholeness. And so there in 6 we can show its health, or health re-established, because it's this vertical, health reestablished. Perhaps you write in brackets, you write court case, because that tone of truth covers the whole part of that court case. In that court case, you know, it's the court of truth, she calls it. And the final judgment that was given in the court of truth was that disease was never there. Disease was never there. Wasn't we have re-established health? Man is not guilty. That's the judgment of truth. Man is not guilty. Disease was never there, going out from the fact that health is always at the point of fulfillment. So at the last subject, we see that every problem is solved or can be solved. Love, every problem finds its solution. Every problem finds its solution. Then, very late, she added just one sentence at the end of the chapter and said, Christian scientists, be a law unto yourself, that mental malpractice cannot harm you, neither when asleep nor when awake. That she added very late. Just at this moment, I don't know, but it was already in this century. Giving a sense of really perfect treatment, saying, if you stay within the column of love and mind, yourself, and our perfect yourself, and keep your consciousness on truth and mind, on knowing the truth, just as the divine mind knows the truth. And if you are a sticker and stay there and don't waver, the third column, life and soul, and don't give in, stay there, then this is your protection. Then this is the law of life. And then nothing can touch us anymore, neither when asleep nor when awake. Because why shouldn't we touch when asleep? Because when we are asleep, we are not giving a good treatment. And yet it doesn't touch us because we begin to see that consciousness of truth and mind is not our consciousness. It's a consciousness of truth and not our consciousness. And if it's the consciousness of truth, that consciousness of truth is unchangeable, life and soul, and therefore will always work and protect us, so that we don't have the feeling, if I don't constantly think about the patient and if I don't constantly treat that patient, then at that very moment he's already in danger. He can already be attacked by animal magnetism. Then he slips me out of the finger. Now, if you put the whole patient back into the one truth, and that truth knows itself as mind, then he is protected. And then we too can leave a treatment and say, that's that. I don't have to repeat it, or I believe in animal magnetism. If I believe that the patient is only safe when I think about the truth, then that's already animal magnetism. I think about the truth. And I give power to my thinking and think that only the power of truth works only when I think about the truth. That's animal magnetism. I believe in a power outside of mind. And so you can understand perhaps why she didn't add that statement at the end of the chapter Animal Magnetism, but here in practice, because it gives us a sense, here is the practice of truth constantly going on and on and on. Yes. So here we have those four big columns constituting the whole chapter on Christian Science practice. And you can ask perhaps why did Mrs. Eddy build it up this way? Why does she start out with love, then truth, then life, and then showing that love, truth, and life in the fourth column has its reflection in spirit? Mr. Dolly showed it and said, look here, you are here in Christianity at the point of science, which in his matrix is life, truth, and love, and which he always showed that the moment we consider Christianity from the point of view of demonstration and not of understanding, that the order of Christianity can be inverted, that you start out with the inverted sense when you try to show how Christianity proves itself, demonstrates itself. So in that Christianity order, which ends with Christianity as science in the matrix, life, truth, and love, if you invert that, it's love, truth, mind. And so Mrs. Eddy would present, because this is practice, because this is the method of demonstration, shows if you want to demonstrate it, you have to go out from perfection, love. And you have to know your perfection, truth, and see that perfection is life. Then you can see that this must be reflected in the patient, because only love, truth, and life will give health to the patient and bring him back to normality. So here in the last column, we can see that love, truth, and life actually are at the point of spirit of perfect reflection. Yes, now, can you see that if we have this chart here that we have made of the 12th chapter, that it is quite interesting to take that chart for yourself and look at it also horizontally, and you feel how it flows. For instance, let's take mind just to show how it flows. And you see, what does mind demand in this chapter? It says in mind, look out with a perfect mind. See perfection. Mind only sees the perfect idea. In your treatment, see that mind is not only seeing perfect idea, but it sees all, and therefore is all. And that mind being all is actually your law on which you rely, in the third column. And that law of mind actually is that law that operates everywhere as the one mind, as the science of mind. It does not operate as arguments and thought transference. So we have a whole ton of mind here in treatment. Seeing if I have a full concept, a full vision of mind, then that full vision of mind must see that mind is all. And that mind that all is a law to the situation. There's no question, will it work or will it not work? Will it apply itself or not apply itself? It's a law to the situation on the basis of the one mind. Or you take spirit and you feel, yes, first is asked that the practitioner is good and pure himself. Then he sees that if he's pure and good himself, that is substance, that is the substance and reality of being, that actually what he wants to give to the patient is goodness and purity himself. And he has to see in his method that this substance is the only substance. That's why the accent is on only and not on substance. That is the only substance, that there is no other substance beside it, that there is not evil substance beside it. The only substance. And that begins to act as the order of spirit, bringing forth that which is substantial and wiping out and separating from it what is not substantial. And so you can go to soul, to the sinlessness and selflessness of soul. If it's selfless, it's without body, therefore incorporeal, in the next column. If it's incorporeal, it is certainly supreme over the body. You have the supremacy of the rule of soul. And that supremacy and the control and rule of soul begins to change and reform a situation. You have the reformation of soul. Or we take principle and see the practitioner must win first his own part by seeing that he is impersonal, that he is not a person that had to justify himself before God, but that he can see that he is always justified before God. Therefore, he bases himself on a scientific basis and not on a personal basis as the basis of all demonstration, and sees that that scientific basis is that science which alone governs, that other sciences and other theories cannot govern the case. And in that government of that divine principle, every detail is reached and every detail is governed, so that not one iota is not touched by it. So you go to the fifth, to the fullness of life, which we entertain in our consciousness, and therefore begin to see that that fullness of life is self-sustained, self-maintained, and therefore floods the whole universe as renewal of life. In truth, we begin to see that if we have the Christ consciousness, that that Christ consciousness has dominion and so brings forth the form of consciousness and not the form of a man, which is true health. Or in love, we begin with the attitude that we take the end for the beginning, we anticipate really fulfillment. See that in the fulfillment there is no penalty in it, that in that fulfillment there is only perfection reigning, and that that is the only status of being, and in the perfection of being every problem is solved. So in this way you can take that whole chapter on one page and see the main categories running through it. That's the chapter on practice.